All right, so my voice is a little hoarse. It's allergies. I promise I'm not sick, at least to my best knowledge. But this season, every year, I start getting a little hoarse. I want to say thank you again to those who are able to come out to the house yesterday. We had an awesome time. If you weren't able to be there, we missed you. Hopefully next time you'll come. For those who forgot, shame on you. I'm just kidding. No, we did miss you, but we had a good time last night. This morning, we of course have been talking about the home and the family, and as a part of that, we began by looking at the role of the husband. We spent some time breaking that down and looking at that from a biblical standpoint and hopefully from a practical standpoint. And then we began to discuss the wife's role. And as with both of them, the first thing we talked about was that the need, if we're going to have godly homes, then we need to be godly people. And so it's important that each of us, as a husband and wife, as a mother or father, to make sure that we are continuing to work and to grow in our spiritual walk with God. And then we got into some more deeper discussion about the actual role they're given to wives. And we spent some time in Genesis, and I won't go back and belabor all of this, but there's some things I want to bring back out of the passage there. But in Genesis chapter 2 is where God forms Eve from the rib of Adam. It's after that Adam then cries out, "Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh." And of course, Jesus will later in Matthew is 18. I always get the chapter mixed up. It's either 18 or 19. But Jesus says, "Let not man separate what God has joined together." And I believe a reference back to Genesis chapter 2. And so there was that original pattern of the marriage home. It was the way God had originally intended it. And then, of course, we get to Genesis 3, and all that kind of changed. Sin entered the world, and not only does it bring death to the soul, but it alters our course in this world. And it did alter the role or the relationship between a husband and wife. So we were looking at a couple passages, and this is kind of where we left off. So if you'll go ahead and turn to 1 Timothy chapter 2, and this is where I want to pick back up. So he begins in verse 8, 1 Timothy 2 and verse 8. He talks about the role of the husband in regard to spiritual matters. And he says, "I want men everywhere, I desire all men everywhere to raise or lift holy hands." In a reference to men leading in the worship, in the public service, and in the service of the home. And then he turns his attention to the role of women. And he begins in verse 9 to say that your value or your worth should not come from the clothes you wear. You should not put more attention and affection upon how you look physically than you do spiritually. And so the point here, Paul, I believe, is that he is saying to women, and the same will be true of men, but in specific, he's talking to women here. He says, your beauty should come from the inside out, not the reverse. And so he makes that statement, and then he says in verse 12, he talks specifically about this role, this dynamic in the relationship between a man and a woman. He says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. All right, so he says that. Now, as we mentioned before, there's some who come to this passage and will attack it and say, well, Paul is just being a chauvinist here. Or Paul is only speaking to the culture of his day. Well, okay, so I've heard those attacks. Is there any validity in them? Well, let's look at the passage and let it speak for itself. So if you go on down, he says in verse 13, for Adam was formed first, then Eve. So he gives us two reasons here for his conclusion that women are to learn in silence and not to teach or exercise authority over a man. And the first thing he says is based upon the created order that Adam was formed first and then Eve. That's number one. That's why this isn't a cultural issue. This isn't Paul talking to the first century. He says this is the way it's been since the beginning. God established this from the very beginning. So that's reason number one. What's reason number two?
Well, it's around the word deceived.
Huh?
It centers around the word deceived.
Yes. The woman was deceived by Satan in the form of the serpent. The man was not. And she became a transgressor. And so because of her sin, God reestablished these roles. Now, if we go back to Genesis chapter 3, that's what's indicated in the text, is it not? Go back to Genesis chapter 3. We're going to have to keep your places here because we're going to go back and forth for a minute. Let's go back to there. We've looked at this in the past, but let's do it one more time. Real quickly. So, verse 16. I will surely, to the woman, he said, I will surely multiply your pain and childbearing. So, number one, in the consequences of sin is that childbearing, would be much more difficult on the woman. And then number two, your desire shall be contrary to your husband, and he shall rule over you. And so God says there's a change in that relationship. Now it's been established because of sin that the husband has leadership over the wife. And it seems to indicate that's not always going to go well. Because what does living a God living in a godly relationship require of the woman?
Submission.
You talk about the word submission, you can talk about it in two ways, right? You can talk about enforced submission. What happens in forced submission?
They make you do it.
Make you do it, right? It's you have an opponent that you're fighting, you can force submission. Wrestling, that's a thing, right? You make somebody submit. That's one form of submission. The other type is voluntary submission, and that's what God is talking about here. Does God want husbands to go around and domineer over their wives and force them into submission? No, that's not what he's looking for. That's not what he wants. But it's a willingness to submit. Yeah, so we looked at that a few weeks ago, but this is the English Standard. And so, like the King James, it has, what's the term?
The desire shall be for your husband.
Yeah, so you might have a different translation of that. So just real quickly, what we looked at is in the terminology, the ESV probably gets it right there, that the actual proper translation of that term should be contrary. And so there's now this conflict that's been introduced into the relationship. And so now you, sin, again, as we talked about, was sin never builds. It always destroys. And it's brought conflict into the relationship between a husband and a wife. But again, this was not God's intention, and it's not God's fault, but because of sin, now you have this conflict within the home. And so how do you deal with it in a godly way? That comes back to that willingness to submit, right? It demands something of women. Now, it demands something of the man, too, does it not? The man has to live up to his responsibility there. Now, too often, men don't do that like they should. But so it's a two-part thing that's got to go on. I don't want to hammer men again, but he's got to live up to his role, and what God wants from the wife is a willingness to submit to her husband. So any other questions? A lot of Bible turning there.
Was the man not deceived as well? Or did he willingly?
Does not. He willingly. It seems to me, from my understanding of it, and we can debate that.
I know.
But my understanding of what Paul says and what's in the text is that he was not deceived. I mean, Paul says she was deceived, which he's trying to give contrast between him and her. And he says she was deceived, and he was not. So he willingly went into that sin.
Which is technically worse.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. This is not a discussion of who had the greater sin. I'm not trying to say that. Sin, right?
That's right. Good.
But willingness to just go into sin would seem worse to me, right? To know you're doing wrong and to do it anyway, that would obviously seem worse to me.
The subject of marriage, Adam did not do what he should have done to protect Eve in that situation either. The man, because later when Scripture talks about it, says, sin entered into the world by one man. Adam was responsible for helping his wife in these situations, and he just failed to do that.
So was Adam married when she was deceived?
That's, I won't get back in that whole discussion.
How could he have protected her against it if he wasn't there? If he wasn't there, how could he have protected her again in that instance?
Well, we're not always around our spouse, but yet God expects us to give protections on those things. So, neither here nor there. Again, I'm not going to beat up the man again, but I'm just—it's just to state that sin created this conflict within the marriage, and now God is calling on men to lead and women to willingly submit, and that's not easy. Because he said what? Your desires can be contrary to your husband, to your husband's leadership. And you see that, right? I mean, we see that. But
it comes back to Christ, the husband loving the wife as Christ loved the church.
Yes, it does.
Worst.
Mm-hmm. And if men love their wives that way, it sure would make the wife's role a lot easier. And it would make the man's role easier, too. But you have this... So, you now have this reestablished structure within the home because as a result of sin. And it's changed the dynamics of the home. And Paul says it's... there are two reasons why women are to submit to their husbands. And one is because of created order, and the second due to the sin that was created. So, is there anything else? So I want to go to verse 15, and I want to deal with that, and then we'll move on to some other things. So, well, before we do, let's go to Ephesians 5. I want to talk a little bit more about that submission issue, and then we'll come back to 1 Peter 2. Somebody read, if you will, 22 through 24. Ephesians 5, 22 through 24.
Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything.
All right, so how do you know what he's talking about is not for submission? Unto the Lord. Okay, explain what you mean. I agree.
If Neil goes out and hops the bank and tells me to go the next time with him, and I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Christ doesn't force us.
Christ does not force us, right? That's the comparison given. He says, wives, submit to your husband as what?
The church submits.
As the church submits to Christ. Does Christ force any of us to do the right thing? Right, he wants our submission through a free will offering. Right, we freely give up our desire for his, and so that's the comparison given here in talking about this idea of submission. Later on, let's go down to verse 30. Paul continues to talk about it. He says, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. We spent some time talking about the husband should love his wife. And of course, the standard given is not a worldly standard. Don't love as the books tell you. Don't love as the great love stories tell you to love. But he says, love as what? As Christ loved the church. That's the standard for the husband. Now, what husband here is living up to that standard? I don't think any of us would raise our hand and say, yeah, I love my wife like Christ loves the church. Well, no, but that's the standard we're trying to get to. That's the goal. And so he says, husband, love your wives. And then he says, let the woman or the wife do what? Respect her husband. What does that mean?
Be submissive.
Okay.
Don't
yeah.
Contrary to what the husband says.
Well, it's all about union. You can't have a true union if there's conflict in between you. So, I mean, it's where it's both your responsibilities to lessen that conflict, to make that unity and that bond stronger. It means, you know, respect each other's wishes and get along.
I would point out that all of this is referring to the husband being a Christian leader. There are other examples and discussions when...
Okay, so that's a good question. So hold on to one second, and I want to come... Well, all right. Maybe I'll go ahead and deal with it. So, is it just referring to Christian husbands?
If your husband's telling you to stay home and not go to church, are you listening to
them? All right, so this is where it gets difficult, right?
But it has to be, because that's the standard we're looking at in the Bible.
Were Christians in Genesis chapter 3?
We're not.
They're followers of
there were no Christians there. Does the wife have a right to disrespect her husband or not submit to him if he's not a Christian?
Well, that's where the witness, if you're a Christian, he's not.
But what if the husband tells, okay, so.
Yeah, I don't know that you worded that just right.
All right, let's go to Peter. Peter has he has some things to say about this, doesn't he?
If the husband is directing things that are.
All right, so let's talk about this for a minute. Hold on a second. Let me get there. All right, let's go to 1 Peter 3. All right, so Peter, again, is talking to husbands and wives. And I want you to notice what he talks about here. Verse 1, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey, listen to that, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey. Well, what's he including in that? He's including husbands that are not Christians. What does he say to the wife? Be subject. Be submissive. That they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives when they see your respectful and pure conduct. All right. So now, there's a lot here we have to kind of pull out of this. Number one.
Is he talking to Christian wives here? That's what I've always thought.
Yeah, yeah, he is. But non-Christian. Husband. The possibility of a non-Christian husband. All right. Yes. So that was the question that came up. So does him not being a Christian give the wife the right to not respect him or be subject to him?
No,
it doesn't. He actually says do the opposite of that. You need to be submissive. Now, here's where the rubber meets the road, and I think this is where you're going.
Yes.
But what about if he's saying to the wife, don't go to church? Well, Christ is the greater submission, right? It's the same thing with the government. The parallel is the same. We're to be subject to the government so long as it does not violate my relationship with God. He does not have the right to violate my relationship with God. So I'm going to hold to God the tightest. Where I can be, I'm going to be submissive to my husband. I'm still going to be respectful. I'm still going to be submissive where possible.
Well, that's how you win them to Christ, is because they know you're acting like that. But also the direction that Christ gives to women in raising children, in running the household. If that husband is contradictory to that, that could stir that same pot as being contradictory to Christ.
So that's in those day-to-day things, that's where it gets difficult. And I'm not saying there's an easy answer to any of this.
But the rule about wife being a subjection to the husband is not just predicated on being a Christian, not being a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus was talking to them about this whole subject of divorce and marriage. He says, at the beginning. In the beginning, God subjected women to their husbands. That doesn't make a difference to Christians or non-Christians, even in the secular world. Otherwise, marriage wouldn't be of any consequence if you weren't a Christian. That's not true.
That's right. And that's why this applies to every marriage. Now, it doesn't mean everybody's living up to it, but this principle does not apply just to Christian homes. This applies to every home, whether they're a Christian or not. But in regard to Christian matters, if that husband or that wife, whoever it is getting in conflict between my relationship with God or even my children's relationship with God, we're going to talk about that. That's different. Because Christ deserves our greater loyalty. But in the day-to-day things, the operation of the home on a day-to-day basis with the just, you know, everyday things. Let me see how many different ways I can say that. But there still needs to be that respect shown and that submission shown in those situations. So, any other questions about that?
So it wouldn't be if you do what you would If you do what you're supposed to do, I will correct you.
Well, the willful submission will never happen if the husband is not leading like he should. For a willful submission to occur, that wife has to completely trust that that husband is leading and would do, has the guidance of Christ in him with certain, I mean, especially certain big matters.
With certain, okay. So it would not depend on just like being respectful. She, let me see how I say this. All right.
Because you're thinking willful does, and maybe this is me thinking willful. Willful means I don't have to stop myself and say, ooh. It's, oh yeah, I trust that he's got it. Now that doesn't mean I can't say, okay, that's what we're going to do. I mean, all right.
Yeah, so.
But willful is the calmness in my head. The easy
alone. Well, okay, so maybe we have different definition of terms. My thing is the willfulness is I am putting myself under that subjection. I am making the decision to do that. Now, what if you have a scoundrel of a husband or a scoundrel of a wife, right? They're just all into all kinds of sin. That, you know, that's going to be hard, right? It's hard to respect somebody who doesn't act very respectful.
You need to consider that before you marry him. You know, if you're Christian and you're marrying a drunk or whatever it is, then you need to think all this through beforehand.
Well, life happens.
That's very true, but that isn't always the case, right? Sometimes you get in, and when I'm in the relationship, I'm in the relationship, right? And so I've got to deal with my situation. Now, if I've got a scoundrel of a husband or a scoundrel of a wife, you know, I am... From the wife's perspective, at least, if it's a spiritual matter, I'm going to always hold to Jesus. But in the day-to-day things, I'm still going to try to be respectful to my husband. I'm still going to submit where possible. Right? That's what Peter says, live a chaste life, a pure life. Where I can be, I'm going to set the higher example. Again, this isn't easy, and it sure would be a lot easier for a wife if the husband acts the way he should, right? Make it easier on your wife, not more difficult. And it's the same thing from the other side. If a wife is respectful, it helps the husband do what he needs to do. And so it's conjointly. But there are situations you get in where it can be very difficult and how you live this out. Now, this does not mean that a wife... Oh, I don't want to deal with that. Let me go to Si while I think about it. I'm going to bring that up.
What, just hearing everybody talk, I mean, for example, if a husband took a job in another state, mm-hmm. had to leave the family, that's a big decision, a big deal. If the wife has roots, has family there, and she doesn't want to move, but where they're moving, there's a church, you know, it's not in a... a rat hole somewhere. Well, the wife can't use the example of, well, I'm not going to do that because you're not a Christian.
No, you're in the house.
You know, she can't hold that against him for that decision.
Yeah.
Now, if it has something to do with they're moving to some little island, there's no church, or, you know, doesn't give them a place to worship or something like that, then, okay, then we're getting that borderline. But you know, mm-hmm.
That's a great example.
I mean,
yeah,
that's a life changing example, mm-hmm. but not necessarily what God would or would not have us do.
Because the moving doesn't necessarily deal with a spiritual matter, right. Not necessarily. But like you say, you know, what if you're moving to somewhere that doesn't have a church anywhere by? Well, then I think the wife should speak up and say, "Hey, this, you know, we can move, but you got to help me out here." And so that's where you work on those things. And that dynamic is different in families. There's some parts of this that are, you know, specific to people, and you just got to try to work through it. But during all that, does that mean the wife just starts yelling at the husband? No, right? She behaves in a chaste, pure way, even in those difficult circumstances. And I think that's what Peter... is trying to get at here. Great example. Do you have something, Paul?
There's plenty of places in this country where it's miles to the nearest church.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got a job that sends you to that place, then start a church there.
I take plan.
That's a great point, but when you've got a young wife who's raising two or three young kids, that's a lot harder for her. I think so, and I think it would be perfectly reasonable for her to sit down with a husband that's not a Christian and say, hey, we can move, but you need to help me out here. Like, get us closer to somewhere that has a church, somewhere I can establish my children going to, our children.
Because as important as physical welfare, your spiritual welfare is mm-hmm. just,
it's family decisions, I think, where you sit down and talk about, not just, I'm the head of the house, and this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times you have to sit down and look at the whole.
And a husband who's doing what he should do that.
And I think us as wives tend to be emotional creatures, so we need to take a step back and get out of our emotion and into our choice.
Mm-hmm. And the man needs to sometimes feel emotionally what the wife is going through. That's a corresponding street. And that's, again, when we get out of the way we think, it gets hard. But we need to try to do that. Good comments. Any others? All right. Did I make everybody mad at me? So let's go back. I want to go back to 1 Timothy chapter 2 again, just real quickly. And I want to note something that for a while had perplexed me. I think I understand it better. I maybe not, but I think I got a better understanding of it. Let's go to chapter 2 and read that very last verse, somebody, please. Not everybody at one time.
Notwithstanding, she shall be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and charity and holiness and sobriety.
So he says, notwithstanding, she shall be saved. How?
In childbearing.
What do you think he's getting at there? He kind of adds that little tagline on it. It does in my Thursday class. We talked about this already, but
that's what she can speak.
Huh?
That's where she can speak.
She can speak. What do you think he means by that? For years I've wondered about that, and then I think I...
Who's the they there? If they continue...
The wife. Okay. The wife. They would go back.
It goes back to Genesis, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When it says, Eve sinned and brought sin into the world. That's a big, big deal, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And she was punished severely for that. But in Genesis it says, thy seed shall all the nations be blessed. And so because of that, women are the source of the Savior that undoes all the sin in the world.
Mm-hmm. So you're barking up the right tree, I think, there. I think there are two ways that he's intending to mean that. Number one, as we've been talking about, when the wife fulfills the role God gave to her, she's doing what God's asked her to do. And in rearing and bringing up children, that's one of the roles that God had intended for women. So number one, that's fulfilling your purpose, right? Part of your big purpose as a wife, as a mother. But number two, I think getting to what Jody was saying, I think it's interesting that men had nothing to do with Jesus coming into this world. It was all between God and a woman. God and a woman. Joseph, no part in it, right? He maybe helped raise Jesus, but I say it's probably been the most easiest father job ever. All right. But it was God who took the woman and said, you know what, I'm going to make you a critical part in my plan. Now, could God have just placed Jesus on the earth somewhere? Could Jesus have been placed somewhere?
Absolutely.
Sure. God could have done it a different way. But he chose to use the woman as the vessel through which the Savior would come. And so I think that's a pretty powerful kind of statement, that she who brought sin into the world was the one through whom sin can be washed out of the world. And I think that's a pretty powerful statement there. So, we're not going to talk about that today, but okay, so let's look at some questions to consider in regard to the wife's relationship with her husband and with her children. Some thought-provoking questions. Why does Paul make the comparison of a wife's submission to her husband with the church's relationship with Christ? We kind of talked about that before, but why does he talk about that? And it's interesting that in that text, again, we mentioned this before, but in Ephesians 5, Jesus' discussion is not centered on the home. He's using the home as a way to illustrate the church. The church is the main subject under discussion, but he uses the relationship between the husband and wife to say, this is the relationship between me and my church.
Bride of Christ. Mm-hmm. So, in a spiritual way, the church and the Savior are husband and wife, and one mm-hmm. should be submissive to the other and show respect.
And again, it's that voluntary submission. You know, we submit to Christ because we want to, and the same is true there. Does being submissive lessen a woman's worth? This is an accusation labeled at tradition, at the biblical view of marriage. Does it lessen her worth?
It does not lessen her worth.
I think it makes it more.
Makes it more? How so? I agree.
It's the exercise of choice.
Exercise of choice. She's willingly. I think that's a key part of this. This isn't the way God intended it. It was not some domineering relationship of a dictator over his subject. Right, that's not the biblical view of marriage. But it is this conjoint relationship where two people are coming together and trying to fulfill the role God had given them.
There's a lot of things that if I was doing it, I would do it differently. But because I'm submitting to Christ, I'm going to do it Christ's way. Mm-hmm. So, same with the woman. If the woman was doing something different, if she was in charge of things, she may do it differently. Mm-hmm. But if it's submitting to the husband.
What does the idea of... what does this... I worded that weird. What does this... I think I meant how does this idea work when a Christian woman is married to an unbeliever? We've talked about that already, so we'll move that on. Should a wife be submissive when her husband isn't a strong spiritual leader? This kind of goes back to that previous question. But
she should help him with it.
What should she do? How should she help him? I agree with that. How should she help him?
You know, watching it play out in life, I think it's just that support system and talking, you know, encouraging the husband to take a step up, encouraging the husband to look to the Bible, encouraging the husband, reminding him, hey, I'm here for you, but, you know, God, let's look at what God says and talking through that relationship. You know, especially if, you know, very easily the wife grew up in the church and is more founded maybe than husband being a newer Christian and just having to discuss things.
And this gets into something else that I wanted to bring up along the way. We don't have but a minute to discuss it, but we also need to think about how we talk about our spouse. Number one, how we talk to them, right? What kind of language are we using? How are we saying what we're saying? Are we living up to the Christ-like principles in how we talk to our spouse? Number two, how do we talk about our spouse to others? Would God be proud? Would we want God to talk about us the way we talk about our spouse?
I'm not saying my husband's grumpy.
You know,
he has been but lately.
do we respect our spouse in the way we talk about them to others? I think this is really important. You know, I've met a lot of different couples in my journey in this life. And I've met some who were very respectful, and I've met others who weren't very respectful. And I tell you, every time, at least on the surface, I'm not in their house, I don't get in their private space, but on the surface, those marriages who seemed stronger were those where the partners were more respectful to each other. I've met some people and been around some who did not talk very well about their spouse when they were around their friends. I don't see there's any good. There's no good in that. I don't know if there's any profit other than the fact that this individual has got to vent their frustration. Yeah, but how do you...
What does this person need from me for them to be?
But how do we vent our frustration? We all get frustrated. There's not a person in here that's been married that hasn't been frustrated with their spouse. But it's in how you how you vent that frustration.
And who you vent it to.
And who you vent it to. Those things matter a lot. Things to think about. Well, we're out of time. We'll be dismissed. Next week, we're going to talk about children. It's been a week or so.
That'll be interesting.
Thank you.